Welcome to episode 43 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is July 22nd, 2012. I am Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my brother in crime fighting, James Furlough.
I am James.
Gotta get a little bit deeper, a little bit raspier.
I know. I'm James.
Justice.
I actually haven't seen it yet, so don't spoil it.
Oh, no.
I haven't seen it, so don't spoil it.
How could you do that? I saw it twice opening
because
day.
Because the guy who wanted to see it with me is at some stupid rodeo, so he's out of town. He's like, we gotta wait until Tuesday.
He forfeited all of his rights.
And I know. Well,
that's terrible.
He makes some claim about having scheduled it 12 months in advance, and so...
Whatever.
Yeah, I know.
Stupid.
Well, I don't want to spend the money twice, so I'm waiting.
Yeah, I did. So this week, like every week, unfortunately, we won't be talking about The Dark Knight Rises. Instead, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, most importantly, the technology they're developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, James got a short disclosure for us.
I work for the Hewlett-Packard. However, I do not represent the Hewlett-Packard's opinion. So I should always say I, and if I say we, I really meant to say I when referring to the Hewlett-Packard.
Cool. And since this will come up, any opinions I render about national investments, those aren't anything I got from anybody else. Those are my opinions, but we'll talk about that more later.
Okay.
If you'd like to follow us on throughout the week, we are on the Twitter. My handle is at Matthew D. Furlough.
And I am at James Furlough.
And you can also follow the show at Furlough Bros, as well as go to Facebook and Google Plus and a couple other cool sites out there. Check us out. Listen to us. And if you want to get all of that contact information, we'd appreciate it. Share us with your friends. It's the best form of advertising. If you like this show, go out and tell somebody. But the hub of it all, the real mecca for technology, if you will, it's furloughbros.com. Go check it out. It's got all of our clicks and links and all the cool stuff that we talk about in the show.
All of our clicks and links.
Heck yeah, man. It's how we roll. Hmm. So go check that out. I also go to furloughbrothers.com, but it just redirects to furloughbros.com.
That's
depending on how crazy you're feeling.
Good at technology.
Oh, I love technology. No.
Yeah. So that's us.
Cool. So
let's talk tech news, man.
All right, man. Sounds good. So guess what? Are you excited about the impending football season?
Do you want an honest answer or the one I should give?
Let's give an honest answer.
I really don't care right now.
Oh, come on.
The sun is out. I'm in the middle of a fence project. I just started a business that is so, you know.
That's terrible news. Well, I'm excited because...
That I don't have television, so...
Yeah, that makes it even more difficult. But I'm excited for my San Francisco 49ers. I'm feeling it this year. I got the juices flowing. We got a great team, great coach, great players. I'm excited. But even more exciting for the players... This isn't a football PSA. Even more exciting for the players, a bunch of them are getting iPads. It's
good
kind of
for them
because
they can't afford it on their own.
I know. Well, it's actually kind of weird. I was reading about this article. It's actually from NFL.com, so it's like legit. But they're talking about how like it's like they're basically one of the things I didn't realize is that the NFL actually has a whole bunch of rules about how you can deal with your playbooks, how you can deal with moving around data. And it's like you could only do digital before this. You could only do digital film, but it had to be drag and dropped from one device to another. So it's like they would literally get hard drives and jump drives and put put all the video stuff that they wanted to share with their team. They would put it on a hard drive and mail it across country, you know, if it was coming from one team to another team. And then you'd have to plug in the hard drive and drag it. Yeah, they didn't have any cloud-based stuff. And so the NFL has been really fighting to change rules and stuff.
The NFL has been fighting to change its own rules?
Well, it's like the players and the teams. Players and the teams have been fighting so technically the organization, which is the National Football League, has been fighting the guys who make the rules.
So the guys, like the commissioner and such, only wants drag and drop, and like players and coaches, I'm assuming, want a more streamlined cloud solution.
Yeah, exactly. All
right.
They're basically saying the only reason why there aren't iPads all over the sidelines is because literally the rules state you can't have a playbook. You can't have electronics like that on the sideline. You have to have a paper playbook. So, like, that's another big thing that they're trying to do.
I wonder if they were, like, you know, way back when they made these rules. Well, how many Super Bowls has it been? It's been a while, right? Like 40-something?
We're like 40, yeah.
Yeah, they were like, you know what? We should put a provision in here that says this can only be paper-based.
Well, I wonder if...
They didn't want, like, augmented glasses. Is that what they were, like, thinking?
I wonder if it was like there was a time where, you know, especially when the NFL was starting, that some teams could afford the newfangled computers when they were first coming out, and some teams couldn't. And so it was just a way to normalize it and equalize it. And now that they're all worth a gazillion dollars and the technology's, you know, cost pennies, it's one of those things where it's finally an iPad actually, you know, as far as they're concerned, is on the same level as paper. But it's like one of the big things you're talking about, how is like, generally speaking, the Wednesday, they were saying, they were called it the Wednesday morning drop-off. That was like the big day, because that was when teams would finally get their film for the game for the weekend, so that they could do prep work and stuff. And yeah, now they're like, yeah, now everybody's got film like 2.5 hours after the game that they were getting film from. So it's like,
you know, I always just assumed that they hired someone whose job literally was to have the NFL package and just record everything.
I would think that's what I thought too, but
maybe they get multiple angles. And
I was gonna say, I'll bet they do that, but I bet they also, it looked like just some of the pictures. It looked like they, you know, like you get the film. You know how they have those like overhead shots that give the entire field from the, like, you get continuous shots of that instead of all the cutting back and forth between stuff, you know, so you can really focus in on individual players and you can give, you know, expert advice to different people. So, I don't know, but it sounds pretty cool. It's, you know, NFL's finally catching up to the...
So basically what's going to happen, just to make sure I understand this, is, okay, so a piece of that is they're going to enable people to upload their video to some centralized server, or at least, you know, swap files via Dropbox, right?
Right.
Which is the way I would do it. I don't know. It depends on how much video we're talking about, right? That's probably the other part of it, is they're literally like, this is a 2-hour game. Though if you cut out all the middle stuff, it's not. There's actually like 20 minutes of film, really, honestly, which is the hilarious part. Because I know when I played college football, we would watch film after film after film, and they were like, all right, we're going to spend this first 20 minutes on this game and then the next 20 minutes on that game. And then they would even dole it down where they literally, so this was college, right, and we were like D3, not that huge. They actually had someone who his job was to go, okay, I'm going to splice to the pass plays, the run plays, and the special teams, and for both offense and defense, and then, you know, so when they'd be like, okay, this is the run part, and you'd watch the, you know, the however many, you know, 30 run plays, and you'd watch the 30 pass plays, and I mean, and they would get it where you would just, you'd watch your stuff, and then they'd be like, okay, rotate, and you'd like rotate to your different group, whatever it was, and it was intense, and you could tell that the coaches had watched the films at least 30 times in the night that they got it to when they were talking with us. It was pretty funny, but yeah, no, that'll be cool. That'll make for a better game. right? Because teams will have an opportunity. So. What it means is that the teams who are really good about preparing and watching film ahead of time are going to get better. And the ones who just rely on, you know, natural talent, oh, we'll just outrun them, they're not. And so it's going to reward those who prepare ahead of time.
Yeah, and, which I have a feeling will favor my San Francisco 49ers.
Super Bowl bust! And then I think and it'll be neat, too, to see what new applications evolve as a result of, you know, I'm sure they've got some, they all have some crazy proprietary thing. I mean, we literally, maybe not, I don't know, we had a guy who just, his job was to start, stop, start, stop. It was pretty low tech, and it was all on tape.
I got to believe they already have their own, like, fancy-dancy little thing that they've built, because it's like, once they have the video, why not use an iPad? You know, it's just like, or whatever.
Second piece of it, right, is they will, so, okay, fine. You get it instantly or, you know, right after the game. It's all in the cloud. You can download it to your pad or your, you know, your computer. And then, but then they'll also, everyone will be able to have them out on the field?
No, see, so far, no.
Okay.
The, like, instead of having big old paper stacks of for their playbooks during, like, practice and stuff, they can have iPads, but on the field, they still need to have a paper version of the playbook.
Oh, interesting.
Which is really, you know, because because there's a certain amount of what the coaches do that's, like, calling plays and audibles and stuff. It requires a certain amount of preparation, because I think it would eventually you'll see, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was – maybe not this season, but I wouldn't be surprised next season or the season after for sure. But, like, everybody has an iPad or somebody who holds on to their iPad for them, right? And so the coach will sit there and go, all right, you get this play. What I want to do is I want to take this. He taps the screen and he goes, this guy wants you to go here, you know, go up this far and come over in this. We're going to change this play just a little bit, and everybody instantly gets an updated version of the play, and so they're like, okay, cool, okay. And I'll go out, and then eventually they'll have Google goggles and they'll just be like, and it'll be like that one Schwarzenegger movie that was really stupid with the clones, but the opening football scene was pretty awesome, where they had all sorts of funny funky awesome technology.
So all right, interesting. And in essence, it'll be just like a Madden game for the coach, it's a big screen. You gotta, okay, we could do run or pass. I choose pass. Okay, I formation, power eye. Oh, I want I formation. Okay, we go up the middle, we go right, left, and they just keep, you know, down the tree, and they go, okay, this is the play.
I wonder.
They probably don't even need an iPad, to be honest. I've seen, they're just like Cliff Notes. That's all those are, and they've got
the right. And I wonder how many of those coaches wouldn't switch over just because they're older guys that have been doing this forever, and they're like, no, I like my piece of paper. I don't want to give up my paper, you know, and even give them the option of the iPad, they just throw it away and smash it. It's stupid piece of junk.
Well, I could see it where, like you were talking about, they just load the game films on there, and that way they could be sitting in bed or eating dinner with their family and watching game film. You know, I'll see that kind of stuff. And they might have some sort of, like, cool app on there where they can quickly drop plays based on some, you know, they just saw something and went, oh, maybe this will work. But like you said, they probably do have a system, and I don't know. I'd be shocked if it was like, you know, iPad central. Every player had an iPad all of a sudden, or, you know, every assistant coach had one and running around with them. But, you know,
right.
Like, what do you do when it gets wet outside? You just don't worry about it. Have a case, I guess. But, all right. Interesting.
Cool.
That's cool. There's your NFL update for you. I honestly get torn because I'm a 49er guy, but I live in Oregon that has no team, but I'm closer to Seattle than I am to San Francisco. Ugh. And so there's the Seahawks. I will admit that when the Seahawks are doing well, I'll pretend to join the bandwagon to fit in. I'll admit to doing it, but I honestly don't care. I enjoy watching it.
If there's a game on,
like, I'll watch it and get into it, but I'm not that kind of fan.
I am the kind of fan that likes to watch winning, and so I got really excited about the Niners last season. They did a lot of winning, so I'm sort of anticipatory, but trust me, if we get through half the season and we've only won, like, half the games, I'll totally be like, Niners suck. Hate the Niners.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm definitely a fair weather fan.
Now, I am following two players. That's all I really care about. It would be three, but yeah. He didn't make it a team this year. So it's only two.
Which does?
It is Jared Allen, defensive lineman, MVP.
Oh, baby, me
like,
too.
Amazing guy for the Minnesota Vikings because I went to high school with him and got beat up by him. And so now I root for him for some reason.
Makes sense.
It wasn't like, okay, he didn't like beat me up, like throw me in a locker. He would just, you know, beat me up on the field because he's a significantly better player than I am. Was
yeah, and so. He's like the coolest player in the NFL right now, so
yeah, that's awesome.
He's kind of got that going for him.
yeah and then I am interested to see how Denver does with their new quarterback, just because, you know, he had a neck injury last year, and we'll see how he does this year.
Yeah,
hey, I've liked him for like the last five-ish years, so no, it's gotta be more than that, because I was following him back in college, and I've been okay, wow, I'm getting old. All right, so I'm totally getting
on the Alex. I have full heartedly head first gotten on the Alex Smith bandwagon, which, you know, he's a Niner, so
good luck with that.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool. So speaking of rooting for home teams, The Onion did a little video this week.
Yeah.
Let me just hit the play button here.
Hewlett-Packard is known for their basic, affordable, no-frills computers, but that doesn't mean they can't keep up with the latest technology. In a press release yesterday, HP said, quote, "We are excited to begin offering that cloud thing that everyone is talking about. We definitely have the cloud on our computers, and it is better than anyone else's cloud." Earlier today, I sat down with HP spokesman Gary Klinman, who said the company couldn't wait to show people, quote, "how they do their cloud stuff."
We are absolutely thrilled that now people with computers or phones, both, will now be able to back things up to the cloud. And yes, and that is definitely something that people do, and they will be doing it with HP.
HP is making their cloud technology the centerpiece of a major new print and television ad campaign.
HP is the company I've always relied on. So when I decided to get on my computer on the cloud, which is how you do it, naturally HP...
It's a picture of a computer sitting on a cloud.
HP's cloud is the perfect tool for emails, Facebooks, texting, and CD-ROMs. How does the cloud work? It's so simple and intuitive, I don't need to waste your time explaining it.
He's just touching random buttons.
Clinton says it isn't surprising there.
I love it. So,
oh man, pluralizing Facebook, that was the cherry for me.
Yeah, it's just awesome. I mean, The Onion itself is, you know, they're always good for a laugh, and I don't think that guy works for HP. I've never seen him before.
probably not.
Well, you know, like The Daily Show, they'll get the actual people and then just splice up the interview in such a way so they sound like a total idiot.
Yeah.
You know, whereas that one, I actually think it's maybe he's not, I don't know, but
well, I know The Onion usually has their own
cast
of characters.
All right.
Yeah,
fair enough, cool. But I think it's just funny. That's why I wanted to share that, and it's about HP. Yeah. And in some ways, it's so true, which is why they picked up on it, because HP's like, we are about the cloud, but then when it comes for details, we're about the cloud.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, that's the blessing and the curse of the cloud, is that there's no definition. It's a keyword. It's a catchphrase.
Well, the way that we keep that HP keeps saying it is, well, HP has PCs and printers and servers and services, and so we can create a unified cloud solution. And
woo!
Well, yeah, and I personally, I could not tell you what that means. And I couldn't give you an example of that other than to go, yeah, you're right. You mix all those together, you should make something cool. So tell me about it. And it just, I don't know. And that's The Onion. It's just making fun of the fact that, yeah, there's the cloud. And I do think that they tend to give pretty... I don't know, superficial is the word I'm looking for, but they just tend to give, you know, very surface level. I don't know. It's just funny. It's just funny because it's true. But don't worry. In like 3 years,
yeah, no, I got you.
HP will have the cloud. and everyone else would be on mobile, and we'd be like, well, that's awesome.
Right. Perfect timing.
Now, actually, here's exactly how HP works. This is it, okay? I mean, and once you understand this, your heart will break, okay? This is how they are. HP has, like, HP Labs, and it's the stuff that they're doing there is beyond amazing. And, oh, by the way, you're a little fuzzy. Just want to make sure you're not downloading stuff right now. Just want to give you that reminder.
You know, I keep checking it, making sure, and
okay.
I'm gonna actually close it though. I'm gonna exit, hopefully.
All right. Just want to make sure
that won't.
You're doing okay there, because I had to turn off my Dropbox because I was uploading stuff and I was like, oh, I don't want the interference. So anyways, okay. So this is super critically important, okay? If you understand this about HP, it will break your heart, but you'll also understand how frustrating it is. HP, like I say, has an amazing R&D labs and has just some wickedly brilliant, okay, you know, positively brilliant people working for HP. And they invent awesome stuff all the time. And 99% of the time, it's 5 years ahead of its time. To the point where you go, this is really cool, but it's missing some sort of key technology to make this ridiculously awesome. Okay?
Right.
One example was HP did create its own surface, actually, called Misto. And it was touch, but the touch just wasn't quite there yet because it used some sort of like infrared thingy to, you know, detect everything. And they didn't have its own layer. It was just like just plain Windows 95 or something on top of it. And they do stuff like that. And so what HP ultimately ends up doing is they go, okay, yeah, this is cool, but it's not workable for whatever reason. And so they put it on this shelf and they stop doing development on it. Okay? And it's just, yeah, they're done. They don't take it to market because it's not viable, or like I said, that key technology is not there. Then, I kid you not, this happens over and over and over again. 5, even 10 years later, another company will come along and they'll go, hey, check out this thing that we made. And the internal blogs within HP will light up and go, oh my gosh, we already did this like 5, 10 years ago. Why aren't we selling this? And it's because, well, 5 years ago, it looked dumb. This week, you know, they came up with pictures of the iPad, like the original models of it. And you're like, yeah, that's not as cool as what they actually came out with. That's what HP has. Instead of taking it off the shelf and, you know, keep working on it until they get it right, they just put it on the shelf and then move on to the next thing. And so it's so frustrating because, like, with this cloud thing, you go, you know what? HP has – it could probably do great in the cloud, could own the cloud, could do great things with it. As a matter of fact, probably he did stuff amazing with it 5 years ago.
If I'm not mistaken, and I might be mistaken, so please, if you're listening to the pod or to this, correct me, but didn't Apple, they discontinued their servers and their North Carolina server farm that operates iCloud? Aren't those all HP servers?
Probably.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, because I know they discontinued them, and it was because they might be IBM, but I don't think they are. I think they're HP. So it's like, they have like this legitimate example of, look what our servers can be used for, but, you know, it's the cloud. But literally, I mean, you know, and yet, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's so weird, and it's so frustrating, because here they are, they're going to do this cloud thing. And like I said, they've already done the smartphone. They had the iPack. and that was before Palm and the iPhone. And I mean, that was touch, and you had to use a stylus, I guess. But you know what I mean? It was all there, and it just was a little bit ahead of its time. And so they closed down that division, and you just sit there and go, man, had you guys just kept working on it, kept doing something? Or I don't know what that piece is that's missing that's just so frustrating, because it's so close. And you get stuff like the inkjet printer where the timing was just right. And, right. you know, that one worked out. And then HP went on to just, you know, rule the printing world. You know, people, whatever, you may not like the pricing strategy, but, you know, it's working really well for HP.
And, yeah.
And I don't know. And I don't know how you fix that, right? How do you, as a CEO, right, or whoever's in charge of this stuff, look at it and go, you know what, this Palm WebOS thing, it's a little bit ahead of its time. We need to work on some key technology. Instead of just trashing the business, let's figure out what that thing is that we're missing, and let's spend, if we have to, the 5 years figuring it out. And then we'll bring it to market, and we'll be ready to go and ready to roll. And it's just, for whatever reason, HP is not structured in such a way for those types of projects to survive. It's kind of like you get 2 to 3 years to ramp up, become a $1 billion business, and if you can't, unfortunately, because it's all, you know, separate divisions, you can't afford to have it around anymore, and, you know, it's out. So
how many CEOs have you had in the last 5 years?
A lot.
Yeah, I think that has as much to do with it as anything. You know, one of the reasons why, you know, I think one of the reasons why Apple, it's credited with having great innovation, but even with companies like Google and Microsoft, you see, when you have a consistent CEO, they're able to help get a team together that comes up with a strategy, and they'll focus on that strategy and stick to that strategy, and it allows technology, it's like the .NET platform for Microsoft, one of their big up-and-coming technologies. And that's taken forever to take off, but it's slowly getting bigger and more robust, and, you know, in Google, it's like, you know, why is Google Plus getting to... You know, it's getting where other companies might have already abandoned it. Google's, you know, just keeps pushing and making it better because they have these CEOs, they have these leaders that have a real strong focus and goal for these technologies. And I think, you know, it's one of the things to have engineers that have, you know, that come up with great ideas and can pitch, you know, futuristic technologies. But you really need a leadership and management who's willing to, like you said, stick with it for 5 years and innovate and change the world. Mm-hmm. It's not good enough to... It's like the memristor thing, and that was such a big deal, and, like, HP figured it out, and they just, like, put it on the shelves. It's, you know, leave it for everybody else to figure out what to do with it. Wow.
It's just frustrating for me.
I believe
personally,
it.
But...
Yeah.
But it makes the opportunity for Onion to make funny videos about it.
Awesome funny videos.
So, you know, we were kind of talking about, you know, CEOs and direction and vision and, you know, obviously HP's apparent lack because of high CEO turnover. they're not the only ones in recent history to have, high turnover.
Flip CEOs like it's nobody's business.
In the old C-suite, if you will. There was a little bit of big news that happened this week. It was actually pretty funny because Microsoft on Monday was doing their Office unveiling, and and that was supposed to be the big news for the week. But I don't care if I don't know if it was planned or not, but it was awesome that Google figured out a way to totally just mess up Microsoft's week.
Right. I was going to say, I barely saw any, like, articles on it. Like, it happened, and everybody was like, oh, stupid. Yeah, so for the record, this is us talking about Microsoft's big announcement. I don't think we have another article on it.
Yeah, I did have, like, a demo thing I was thinking about sharing, but, I mean, it's how do you... So, this is Excel. You can type numbers in and make equations.
Yeah, that's totally...
It's just I'm personally excited Excel. About it, but it's not something you talk about on the show.
Right. We'll talk about it more as you actually get to a launchable product.
Yeah, especially once I get to play with it, whenever that happens. So, this other piece of news that totally overshadowed it, was this other company who's had a lot of CEO turnover in the last couple years, our good friends, Yahoo.
Yahoo!
Yeah, they managed to nab somebody who I don't think anybody saw coming.
I didn't, yeah. So Yahoo, you know, obviously they're like, they their building is across the street from where I saw The Dark Knight Rises. So it's so they're
well, there. They, you
so,
go. They still exist.
I'm so fancy. So I get to, you know, so they're kind of big deal around the valley when this stuff comes up, and so
they are a hometown hero. I'll admit it.
Exactly. Even though they're, you know, totally messing everything up and can't keep their stuff together, we still love them.
I used Yahoo Search for many years before making the big old switch.
I'm not sure I've ever searched for anything through Yahoo. I just sort of root for them.
and it makes you feel any better. Our t-shirt printing company was first listed on Yahoo.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice.
So
that's cool.
There you go. And then eventually, you know, listed on Google. But
Bob the Autographer, by the way, if anyone's wondering. So anyways, they got a new CEO, Marissa Mayer, and she happens to be a ex-employee of the Google, and they're she was an exec over there. She used an iPhone, which they kept pretty well secret, but she was one of those. It was so funny. It was like there was a big article about like her using an iPhone, and like, yeah, they detected, like, at least detectives that would, like, not these detectives, but, like, you know, internet detectives, as they are, people who just like search for stuff, search for signs of
those guys,
you know, and
I know,
oh,
you're
yeah,
talking about,
like,
I love those guys.
And a bunch of her tweets, like, early this year, had Instagram pictures, which only was available on the Apple iPhone at the time. You know, and everybody's like,
enough.
Oh, snap. you know, she's so this is sort of a personal, this doesn't really have anything to do with the CEO. I just thought it was funny. The talk show that I listen to every morning on my commute to work, they interviewed her while she was working at Google.
Oh, really?
And oh, yeah, yeah. And somehow they weren't entirely clear on it, but they really offended her somehow. And now she, like, hates them with a passion. So they were like, great. I'm sure our search results on Google are already all messed up because she hates us. Now we're going to have a hard time on Yahoo, too. At least they're still Bing.
Bing is Yahoo, but that's okay.
I know. They don't know that.
It was
though,
funny.
It was a funny joke. I have a sneaky suspicion. Sometimes they get a little rambunctious and immature. And Marissa Mayer, the new CEO of Yahoo, isn't ugly. And I have a feeling that had something to do with why she hates them. And
Oh boy.
Anyways, but you know, enough about her physical appearance. Now about her, the job she has to
do. So from everything that I understand, she's wicked smart. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
Like HP Labs, wicked smart.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll allow it.
I'll allow it. Yeah, so she was, what, the 20th Google employee, the first female engineer, and actually worked on the early search algorithm. And then was in charge of the famous homepage and was in charge of the entire search division, and then kind of got repurposed, I think is the word, to the local search or scene or something like that. And then, which at the time they were like, it's not really a promotion per se, but it was more like, we need help in this position and you're amazing, so go help us make this better. You know, that kind of promotion. And
yeah.
And then from what I could tell, they then hired someone else to, like, look over the search and local, which suddenly took her from one step away from the C-suite to two steps away. And you're like, whoa, wait a second here. That's what we call a demotion. And
yeah.
And I kind of wonder how much of that played a role with it. But then also she was like one of the few people outside of Google who you actually know who she is.
Right.
And she was like Matt Cutts is the other one, but he's like in charge of spam. And so, you know, he's always on blogs and writing and therefore, you know about him. Those two, I would say, are like the two most non-founder/CEO, you know, of the three. Those are the two
say,
that you know.
I knew of Marissa Mayer before this. That was, you know.
Yeah, she's done goofy online videos for promotional stuff, and she goes to talks all the time. And
because she's like, you know, we'll bring it back to physical appearance. Because she's into fashion, she ends up on the cover of like magazines all the time for like, you know, tech savvy, professional, fashionable women, and you know, so she's sort of a, you know, on top of being smart, she plays the crowd really well.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, and so she's always seemed like she wanted more. I guess.
Right.
It's kind of where I was headed with that. And now she's got it. And I think I saw, was it today or yesterday, her package?
Yeah.
She's going to get paid well for.
Unbelievable, yeah.
I don't think Google was paying her that much, to be honest.
I doubt it. Well, but she's the CEO now. I mean,
hey, yeah. You know, I sit there and like, yeah, it's, I don't know, it's cool. That's, she's 37 years old and is the CEO. Of a major tech company, and
so the big question is, what is she going to do after Yahoo collapses under its own weight?
So, well, that's the question, isn't it? And do you actually believe that Yahoo is still ill-fated?
Yes,
because she's not going to be like the new RIM CEO where everything's fine, nothing to see here, move right along. I mean, she's clearly not that.
Yeah.
I mean,
So. So one of the I don't think she will be. I think she'll bring the Google. You know, she was honed at Google. She knows what Google's like, and I think you'll see Yahoo become more Google-esque, which is sort of the problem because, my first thought is unless there was something within Google where she really felt like we're doing it wrong, there's a real potential for somebody else who's aggressive and has got enough weight under them to come and attack us from this other angle, unless she felt like there was, and they just weren't listening to her about it, what is she going to bring to Yahoo that Google doesn't already have? You know, it's not like they're going to, it's not like she's going to bring a new algorithm. She helped write the Google algorithm, you know?
Well, they don't even do their own search anymore, so that, right. She's not going to do that. I think... her number one thing is she has to try really hard to figure out like, okay, what's Yahoo good at? What are some of our core competencies? And then she's just gonna work. I think her number one priority is gonna be hiring and keeping people around, and you know, and just doing what it takes to get the best and brightest minds back to Yahoo. And you know, she's not gonna get all of them, but she's gonna get better ones and motivate the ones who are good to stay. That's going to be her number one priority. And then she's just going to do this relentless, okay, Yahoo has all these properties. Let's make them better. And I think she's going to sit there and say, let's HTML5 everything. Let's streamline everything. Let's get rid of the clunkiness. We don't need a gradient here. Solid colors. You know, let's streamline and make everything super fast, super zippy. Because I think she's going to buy into that. You know, that's the Google thing, right? We care about page load time. That's super important. It'll be interesting to see how much their homepage changes. You know, does she stick with the culture of, no, millions and millions of people stop every single day here and catch their regular news on the Yahoo homepage. We can't just start deleting things. It's not I think that would be bad.
You don't want to know what my crazy proposition is?
Yeah, let's hear it, man.
Get rid of the search bar.
Whoa.
I think you know, and it comes
back to...
Would
that be a big middle finger to Bing? Maybe Yahoo teams up with Google.
It's one of those things where it's like, what does the search, you know, there's something, Yahoo became famous and became huge because of search, and then they got devastated because they decided to, you know, the founders went to... The founders went to them and said, hey, we think this works better. And Yahoo said, come back to us when you have a real product. And then, you know, Google just devastated them. And she was part of that process. And so I think that to me is going to be the big thing. It's like, because right now, like you said, you know, people still think of Yahoo as a search engine, and it's not. It's powered by Bing. And it's one of those things where maybe relegate it to the bottom of the page or something if they're in some sort of a contract where they can't get out of it. But it's one of those things where it's like people don't go to Yahoo anymore to search. I don't think. Or if they do, that's a dying business. That's not going to be something that they're not going to overtake Google, unless she's got some sort of secret, you know, sauce that they're gonna, you know, or some sort of really specialized search thing like Wolfram Alpha. Wolfram Alpha has a totally different strategy for searching than Google. The only problem is it's like at this point, Wolfram Alpha is having a hard time keeping up, you know, keeping the distance on Google, because Google, it's really easy for, you know, they got so many people and so much processing power, it's relatively easy for them to catch up, and they're working on replicating everything that Wolfram Alpha can do.
Yeah, and they're calling it the knowledge graph, and they're just going to come at them at the side and go, oh yeah, we do that plus everything else.
Right, exactly. And you know, Wolfram Alpha will have been this cool footnote, but they're, you know, but they're not going to beat Google. And anything that Yahoo does, they're, and you know that their eye is on Yahoo. Their old friend works at Yahoo, you know, leads Yahoo now. They're not going to let that just, they're not going to ignore that and let her, you know, catch up to them, you know, through some other route. Nah, if she's at Yahoo and she thinks she has a strategy, if she's a plan, it has nothing to do with search, in my, you know, my personal opinion. And, you know, it's going to be all about focusing the service, focusing the news, focusing the information, building, like you said, yeah, building a better web page and making it load fast is going to be a big thing. I tried to load Yahoo just now just to take a look because I, like, never go there.
Oh, yeah.
And my video stream started to drag, which tells me something, but, you know, about the slowness of it.
That is still a pretty big search bar.
Yeah, it's significant. It's you know, Yahoo search is still, quote unquote, is still, you know, that's one of their big legacies, and I don't think they haven't been willing to give that up. And that's why it's not, you know, it's just your brand, but it's somebody else's machine. And why would you, not to mention, clearly, you know, Bing is the inferior of the two machines. Whenever they have good search results, oftentimes it's because they Googled it and then just replicated the top 10 on their top 10, you know. It's like, and there's so many things like that are just, you know, I don't think search is helping them. And I think what they're going to need to do, and, you know, it's what, you know, because a lot of people are saying you got to take a Steve Jobs approach to this, which actually for how often people suggest you should be more like Steve Jobs, this is one of the times where it actually makes sense. Because what did he do? He took a completely struggling company that had fallen completely behind and basically didn't have any hope of ever catching up with Microsoft. And 10 years later,
yeah,
you know, they're beating them in pretty much every other area other than core computing. And in core computing, they're slowly, meticulously catching up. And, you know, I think for Yahoo, yeah, that's kind of a similar strategy. Get rid of the stuff that might work. You know, get rid of the stuff that doesn't work and just be ruthless about it. If it doesn't work, get rid of it. Why keep it around? Why even focus on it? And if it is working, you know, really make it a big emphasis. You know, focus on the people. Like you said, I think recruiting is going to be a big thing. Getting smart people in there, keeping the smart people that you have, creating good teams that are innovative and are going to, you know, try to develop new technologies and do new things. And, you know, and another big part thing that Apple did, especially in those early days, was just really, really compelling advertisements. You know, they hit the ads hard, and they, you know, the whole Think Different campaign changed what people thought about Apple and got people excited about this new product. And if she can come in there with a, you know, if she can get good people, she can get rid of the garbage, and she can have a really compelling, exciting, you know, ad campaign, you know, there might be something there. People still go to Yahoo. It's still one of the most searched, yeah, visited websites. So, you know, it's not like they don't offer, it's not like they offer nothing. The other, you know, I don't know.
So how long do you think she has? You know, how much patience do you think her stockholders and board members and all those people have for her to, you know, quote, turn it around, if she can?
I'd say probably a good quarter and a half. No, I bet they would. I'll bet they'll give her a year and a half.
You know, she's also got pretty good timing, because theoretically the economy is going to come out of whatever it's in right now.
Yeah, and theoretically.
She'll be able to...
I love that theory.
Well, I'm sure you do. If it does, she'll get to ride that wind up, right?
Right.
It'll seem like she's doing something good, even though it's just a rising tide and she's one of the boats.
Right.
And that could or should buy her time to see whatever her vision is come to reality. That's been the biggest problem with companies like RIM and Yahoo and even HP, right? Is like, yeah, things weren't great, and then you tack on an economy on top of it, and all of a sudden you look like an idiot CEO.
Right, yeah. Because, yeah. And then you got the, yeah.
And you try to explain as hard as you can. No, it's the economy. We're trying really hard. Just give me more time. And they just... People don't have any patience for that at all.
They look at Google and Apple and go, well, what about them? Economy doesn't seem to be affecting them. Like, that's totally apples to oranges. Don't do that to me. But, that's, yeah. I don't know. It'll be interesting. I don't think she has very long, but if she's got a plan, if she's got a strategy, I don't think she needs very long, How long does it take to – thank you for sharing your foot with me.
My bare foot, actually. Here's my other one.
Barefoot. Why are you sharing your bare feet?
I don't know. That was a commenter request. So I just did it.
Okay. Cool.
Anyways.
I lost it. I think she's got about a... and realistically, I think it's not just she's got about a year to turn it around, to prove herself to the board. I think it's... In a year, she'll either be succeeding or not. Like, it's one of those things where,
I think if a year from now, she can say, this is Yahoo's strategy, and here's how we're doing it, she'll keep her job.
Yeah.
If we get a year in from now and she's like, well, Yahoo's a complicated beast and we're evaluating and we're trying stuff out and, stay tuned, she's not going to keep her job.
Yeah.
Because that was a big problem that Carol Bartz had was she, you'd ask her, what's Yahoo's strategy? What is Yahoo? And she's just like, she never had a good answer. It was like HP's, it's the cloud. You're just like, answer.
That's been Yahoo's problem for a really, really long time. And I think... if she has a strategy, if she has a plan, and I really think it personally begins, and it would not be surprised if the strategy begins with a real cultural movement away from Yahoo as a search engine, and not just internal culturally, but externally culturally. We do something else. We don't do search. There might be a search bar, but that's not why we're here anymore.
That might be weird just because of, contracts and agreements and stuff, but... Huh. All right.
Yeah. So that's my thought.
Let's see. Yahoo. They could be back on the map. I'd root for them. I wouldn't necessarily visit, but I would root for them. No, I use Flickr still, so there's that. So I can
root for
that.
I use Picasa. I hate Flickr.
No. Really?
On a side note.
Why do you hate Flickr?
Because they like to protect their images, which I know sounds crazy, but...
I hate it when they do that.
Well, one of the things that happens is it's like Reddit has a lot of built-in suite tools that... and not actually like suite, like SWEET, but SUITE. They have a suite of tools, and a lot of times what they do is you can connect... if you link to a page with a primary image, like the imager.com, where it's an image hosting site, they can pick out which picture to go to, and then they'll just pull the picture up, and so they'll have these inline viewers, and so you're in the website, you just click a button and it opens up the picture. You don't actually have to leave the site. It's really cool, really quick. Doesn't work with Flickr. It picks up that there's an image, but when you click on it, it doesn't load it, and it's because they try to hide it behind a couple of div tables and stuff. It's really kind of lame. And what's really frustrating about it to me isn't that they try to hide it; it's that they're terrible at hiding it. It's like, you can't just, if you go to Flickr, you can't just click on a picture and say copy. You have to go click on the picture, inspect element, and it's right in the element that you're inspecting, and you just click on the URL and it pops up the picture. And you're like, so not only do you just make it difficult for other websites to take advantage of it, it's literally one of the easiest things in the world to copy it. And you can just Google search how to copy images from Flickr and it'll tell you. You shake your head and you're like, what are you guys even trying to do here? you've got security that is just annoying. It's pesky. It's not effective. you know, there are some sites that actually do a very good job of you got to get deep into the HTML before you can break through and actually catch the actual URL for the image.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't do any of that. They just have a couple of HTML elements that make it a little more difficult, so the lay user can't get in there. You know, but somebody who decided to not Google search it, but drives me nuts. It's bad technology.
I can see where that is annoying.
Yeah. So.
Nice little rant there. That's good. Flickr. So the way I use it right now is I'll take a picture on my iPhone, put whatever filters I'm gonna do on it because I'm cool like that, and then
Sepia filter.
Exactly.
More contrast.
and then I'll upload it to Instagram.
Ooh.
Which I'll then send to like Facebook or Twitter, depends on, or email it to whoever. But then I will also sometimes send it to Flickr, because on my blog I've got a cool little window slideshow that people can click on and watch the photos I've taken, since it's a personal blog, personal photos.
Cool.
But then I also have I actually don't think it uses an Instagram API for this one, not Flickr, but I also have a little like roll of pictures going across the top, which is pretty awesome. Outside the ratrush.com. And so that's what I
you want to see. I was what?
So anyway, so that's how I use it. It's just kind of for those photos that I wanna for whatever reason keep and show on the blog, that's where I'll put it. All right.
Cool.
Flickr, she'll bring it back. It's not as dead or anything, but you know. And they already sold Delicious, right? So that one's, she's done.
I think so.
Can't do anything about that. Oh well. To the YouTube guys, actually, if I remember correctly, to keep tabs on the opera here. You still there?
I'm here.
Okay, you just weren't reacting. I was kind of waiting for you to go, oh yeah, I knew that. Or
I didn't know that. Oh, really? I was like, yeah, I couldn't remember who Delicious got sold to. You know, so I was just kind of like...
Guys like Chad Hurley and his guy who we never can remember his name. He's like, Chad is like Neil Armstrong.
Yeah, happens a lot.
We all know his name. We all know who he is. And then there's this other guy. What did he do? He was there. I just can't... he's got a name, I'm sure.
Yeah. You know,
I'm sure it was important. Couldn't have been done without him type of thing, but...
There's Mark Zuckerberg, and then there's the friend of his that sued him.
Yeah,
we all watched a movie about him, and none of us can remember his name.
And it's Spider-Man. Peter Parker. Is that his name?
I know he's Garfield.
Spoiler alert, I guess.
Oh, man.
All right. So, let's talk about another company. This is fun.
All right.
I just love... Let's see, we made fun of HP. I don't know. We didn't necessarily make fun of Yahoo other than to go, Yahoo's not doing great and maybe there's some hope to them.
I took it out on Flickr, though.
we made fun of Flickr. I made a quick, you had to be fast, I made a quick dig at RIM. And
I did catch that one.
So let's just keep it going. It's kind of like we're in the middle of the season of the soap operas, and so everything becomes unraveled real quick. That's kind of what it feels like.
Yeah.
And then we'll hit Q4, and everything will be fine again.
Yeah.
It's the economy, stupid, right? That's what it is. That's what's making our jobs fun. From a bashing standpoint, I actually like new technology, but the corporate opera is fun when the economy is not doing well, because...
That's true, because everyone's panicking. It's that part of you're right. It's like you're part of the soap opera season where like all these you know quarreling lovers and the fathers messing with their daughters that sounded awful. But
it feels like we're at the end of the second movie of the trilogy.
Right. So
there's still that hope, you know, on the third movie, it's all gonna work out. I don't know how. It's probably not going to be the exact way that I want it to be, but yeah, you know, there's going to be an end. And once again, I have not seen the third Batman, so don't anybody write a comment in there, otherwise I'm turning it off. And I don't know what you could spoil. Bim and Dennis.
I almost went there, man.
Oh, that would have been bad. All right, so anyways, on that note, let's talk about Microsoft.
Yeah, definitely.
So they did their annual finances this week. They have a really weird fiscal year. It ends in the
quarterly
year. I thought it was it quarterly? I thought this was also their...
Maybe it was. I don't remember.
Annual. Let's see here. I don't know. Whatever. They talked about finances. I really felt like it was an annual thing, but I don't know, to be honest. Doesn't matter. For the first time in company history, Microsoft announced a loss.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. They didn't do so well. They lost, what was the final?
It's like $400 million.
Oh, their first quarterly loss. Okay, there you go.
Okay.
All right. Quarterly, you win. I don't remember. Where does it say how much it is? They lost...
It's less than a half bill.
Yeah. They lost money. $492 million. It's a loss. But, you know, they're not going anywhere. And the reason behind it... And so, okay, fine. They lost money. That's notable, you know... They're dying. No, that's not the case.
No, man, we just got to leave it there. Let's jump on the bandwagon. Everybody else did. Microsoft is doomed. Ah.
Don't get me wrong. They have some issues that they need to work through, and I'm not – Surface is cool. I don't know if it's going to solve their problem. I don't know if Windows 8 is going to solve it, but you know, they're working through it. They're not dying. And honestly, the reason behind it is significantly more interesting, and in some ways even more telling. Let's see here. 5 years ago, you are totally blurry and fuzzy, man. I want you to hear this. You there? He's not there. That's sad. Well, we'll see if he can get back. In the meantime... We'll just wait a couple seconds here. See if we can figure it out. We'll give him the whole, like, what's up, man? You dead? We'll just ask him. See what he says. Oh, man. Technology. Google Huddles are totally awesome. I think they're great, especially when you have, like, in our particular instance, part of my wife's family lives in one place and part of them lives in another place, and she can all get them all together and talk to them. And it's really nice and useful for that. But every once in a while, if you don't have the strongest of internet connections, which is my brother's case, can get dead spots like this. Hey, are you back?
Hey.
Hey. How you doing, man? You look like you're breathing hard.
I don't know. I'm trying to figure... What? I look like I'm breathing hard? I'm not. I'm trying to figure out what's going on, because I'm blaming Microsoft. I think Microsoft is downloading something in the background, like an update or something, and they won't tell me what it is, because there's nothing else going on in the house right now.
Well,
literally, nothing else is
if
on.
If you need to kill the video... I won't be offended. But.
It's all right. Give me 1 second.
1001. That's all you get. Okay. I was telling people that Google Huddle is pretty cool.
I seem to be back, so let's just.
But sometimes it can cause problems because it's cutting edge technology. So, as I was talking about, the reason for Microsoft's loss this quarter was actually due to a purchase that they made 5 years ago. They purchased a company called Aquantive. Okay, do you know? Did you read much about this at all?
No. All right, no, to
cool.
be totally
all
honest,
right. You're an engineer. You don't care about the finance stuff, so that's cool.
Yeah.
Let me inform you. So they bought this company called Aquantive for $6.3 billion in cash.
Nice.
At the time, it was their largest acquisition. I think since then they bought Skype for more.
Yeah.
Let's see. What'd they pay for Skype? $8.5 billion. So, you know.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, yeah. A little more. And then they just bought Yammer for $1.2 billion. So they're, you know, they're buying stuff. This was one of their purchases. And in some ways, what you're going to hear is a cautionary tale for what could happen to these other guys. Aquantiv was a an online advertising company for display ads, if I remember correctly. And they were doing awesome. You know, kicking butts, taking names, that kind of things. They were growing. They had growing profits. I think like the year that they were bought, their profits grew like 40%. I mean, you know, that's not insignificant. They had 2,600 people in the company. They happened to be based in the Seattle area. Kind of nice. And they were just, they were doing really, really well. And the classic thing happened. Microsoft was like, we want to get into the advertising space. We want to, you know, kick some tail, really start making some money with that. And so they bought them. And, you know, everyone was super excited. I'm sure there were corks of champagne going off everywhere. And the basic thing that happened was your classic cultural clash, where they were very like egalitarian. No, that's not right. Give me your ego powers. Yeah, there we go. I was waiting for the
egalitarian.
Laugh. Yeah, egalitarian. And Microsoft is not exactly that way. The other thing was that they were very much into like they were in advertising. You know, they were in advertising and talking about revenue, and so they had this culture of like very fast paced decisions, quick growth. We're talking about ads and, you know, making money. And then they got bought by this company that is all about Windows and all about engineering. And, you know, the money is never really something that's talked about, and they're not growing very much. You know, man, you are like either totally focused and like not moving at all, or you're on your way out again. Give me a sign. All right, you're gone. That's cool. So I'll just keep talking. So they bought them, and I thought they had a really good analogy here. It said that the task of evangelizing the business of advertising was and not talking about software was akin to asking Willy Wonka to grow vegetables. And you know, and so that's literally like the type of clash that they were talking about. And unfortunately, it was just one of those things where Microsoft for whatever reason decided, yeah, you know, we bought them and they're awesome and they're going to help us with this, but they then very quickly, or I don't want to say like quickly, but they decided to continue to focus on search and improving the search engine and kept pouring resources into the search engine as opposed to really helping to integrate Aquantiv and helping them become a part of the company and helping them become a success. Unfortunately, whenever you do that, you have the classic brain drain where people who are, you know, who are all stars in the company be like, you know what? They're not supporting us. They're not helping us grow. This is now miserable. I'm out. See you later, alligator. And so people started leaving. And now, unfortunately, Aquantiv is literally the former shell that it was. And the reason why Microsoft lost money was because they literally did a $6.2 billion write-down. So for those of you doing the math, they paid $6.3. They just did a write-down of $6.2. Why is my brother calling me? Let's find out. Nope, not going to answer me. I'm a little slow on the dial there. They lost, you know, so they paid what, 6.3? They just wrote off 6.2. So they were pretty much like, yeah, all that value is gone now as a result of it. And it's just kind of sad that you had this company that was doing awesome. And, you know, now they're not anymore. So the big question really now that they've done this write-off and, you know, had to admit we did not integrate them well at all and we did not learn from or we did not, you know, really take advantage of all this money that we spent. The question goes, okay, now we're looking at Skype and you're looking at Yammer. How are they going to be able to handle that? One of the things that they mentioned is that the actual Skype guys, they still have their own special like keypad login things that say Skype on them. They're not heavily into the Microsoft, you know, they're not trying to pretend that they're part of Microsoft in the classic traditional way. And so it's very interesting indeed to see what's going on with them. And we'll see. They might be able to pull off with Skype and with Yammer. I hope they do, honestly. It's not fun to see a company, a rising star like that, die just because they got bought by a big company. So, with that, my brother's still gone, which is kind of sad because I do the show with him. And I don't have another guest to replace him. Oh, okay, here we go. He's calling me back. All right. Hey, man, what's up?
Hey, Dad was saying he thinks there's a down tree. I think I just don't have internet.
Oh, man, bummer. Here, I'll tell you what. Yeah. I'll give you, I'll have you call in. Okay, and we're back. Matthew, I got you on the phone here. Say hello.
Hello, how's it going?
I'm fine, but apparently your internet stinks, but thankfully technology is going to allow us to keep on keeping on. So I just did an amazing soliloquy, if I do say so myself, about Microsoft and how they squandered their $6.3 billion buy of Aquantive. You, my brother, are going to have to listen to the podcast.
All right.
To hear it, because I'm not going to repeat myself. And I was getting ready to talk about the shared data plans, but now that you're back, I'm not compelled to stick with that. So we can go back to that later if we have time. I was just literally finding a filler. One of the things that you wanted to talk about was some Apple stuff, it looks like.
Yeah, so you might have to give me the title that I wrote because
you can't go online, huh?
Oh yeah, I don't have any internet at all.
Like, awesome.
I'm doing this all by the seat of my pants.
Sorry. I'll try to drive a little more. So one of the things you want to talk about was Tim Cook claiming there will be no price umbrella for tablets.
Right. So cool. You know, you just should definitely open up this document because it's a cool article.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Got a couple of.
I may or may not have already seen this because it's
yes,
awesome.
Well, so one of the big things that you know, one of the big questions that comes up is this, you know, it's a term I've never actually heard before, and as soon as I heard it, I thought it was awesome. But it's called a price umbrella, and it's basically what happens is you have a top price that's set by some company, whether they're the product leader or not, doesn't really matter. But it's all more important when it's a product leader. But basically what happens is they set some price point. And then all that area underneath them is what's called that price that they set is the umbrella, and all that area underneath them is a place where competitors can play and basically claim that they're cost less than everybody else.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of an issue for Apple right now, as we see going on with the Google tablet.
So when you look at this graph, basically it looks like triangles, right? With the iPhone, there's one really high price point, and it goes all the way down to zero with the 3GS locked, 8 gig, right?
Correct.
With the iPod, it has a high of what is it, $400? Holy cow! For the 64 gigabyte Touch, all the way down to it looks like what, $50 for the 2 gigabyte Shuffle. And so it makes a nice triangle all the way down. And now with the iPad, it's got the high at $829 approximately, which is the third generation Wi-Fi plus LTE 64 gigabyte iPad. And then there's that triangle going down, but this particular triangle stops at $400, which is the second generation Wi-Fi only 16 gigabyte iPad.
Correct. Right. And so it's and he shows this, you know, like you said, he shows this triangle, and so there's this entire section where going from the all the way to the highest price down to the zero, where Apple can play or other people can play. And basically, what the argument of this this writer is, and it seems kind of compelling. One of the big statements that Tim Cook made was that we won't be the price umbrella for anybody. We're not going to let somebody undercut us on price. You know, we're going to control all the area from the top to bottom, and it's what's allowed them to dominate in the iPod field. And it's a lot of people attribute the fact that now that they have the super low cost devices on every carrier, you know, the $0 3GS, that's what's allowing them to really continue to aggressively fight against, you know, Android, because there's no price advantage. Basically, Tim Cook said, yeah, we're not going to let anybody have a price advantage on us for the iPad or in the tablet space. And everybody's like, well, there, you know, you can't sell a $150 10-inch iPad that basically only lives one option, right? At some point, you kind of make a smaller iPad.
Which, by the way, total side note, I was talking with someone Thursday night, and he was like, so I'm thinking about getting a Kindle. And I went, really? How about you think more about getting a Nexus 7? So
right.
I made my first recommendation. Now, granted, he wasn't thinking, you know, he was thinking about a Kindle, and I dissuaded him from it pretty easily, actually. But, you know, but that's, you know, he's someone who, like, it was funny. He was thinking about getting an iPad and ultimately was like, I don't think I can. But he was, how do I want to say it? He was thinking about getting an iPad instead of a computer. And I was like, I think you want a computer for what you do, because you're still pretty old school. And so he got that. But then he was like, I still want something for traveling, something light, which was kind of why he wanted the iPad. But he already heard about the laptop, and so then he was like, well, think about getting a Kindle, because it's cheap as cheap. And I was like, well, maybe not.
Yeah. I've now recommended the Nexus 7 to, I think, two different people who have asked about getting a tablet. And their entire thing is price point. They can't afford the iPad they want, so they're going to go down a little bit less. And I keep saying, stick with the Nexus 7. It appears to be the market leader at the price point you're looking at. And I think that, you know, it's becoming more and more obvious that Apple can play in that field. And the one thing that I really love, the classic example.
You know, the reason why people don't want a 7-inch iPad is because Steve Jobs made the comment, you know, your fingers are too big for user interface. And he made the joke, you know, you'd have to actually not just ship your tablet, but you have to ship sandpaper so you can file down the tips of your fingers so you can hit the UI things. At the time, nobody pointed out the obvious counter argument, which is, what about the iPhone? It's a lot smaller. Can't you just make a UI somewhere in between those two? You know, and, you know, which is a pretty compelling argument. Obviously Apple can make one, and the question really comes down to, it's a price point, it's a price thing. Do they think that they can make money off of it? Do they think that people want it? And, you know, they're not afraid to cannibalize sales. It's never been something that they've strayed away from. You know, sell an iPad mini, as it were, at the cost of selling fewer full-size iPads. But, you know, for the future of tablet computing, they definitely would be willing to make that, you know, make that switch, make that compromise. So
this is just further proof or further conjecture that, or signs that they're probably going to come up with something smaller.
Right, and you know, Wall Street Journal also came in and said that, yeah, that we've got sources.
We talked about that last week. I mean, I've...
No, we talked about... not Wall Street Journal. The New York Times now has gotten on the bandwagon of we have inside sources. It's becoming one of those things where it's like, it's, you know, we don't usually like to talk about rumor, but this is one of those ones where it seems to be coming.
Well, what I liked about this one is it was an interesting way of looking at the situation.
Right. You know, that's why I wanted to bring it up.
prognosticate what was going to happen.
Exactly. Right. Well, and what it says, if for no nothing else, it tells you about where the future pricing scheme is going to go, no matter what size tablet it is. You know, their goal is to not give Google any wiggle room down in the lower end models. They're going to keep lowering the prices as time goes on, mm-hmm. which is, I think, what everybody expected. But, you know, it's cool to hear more evidence of that.
Cool.
So, all right. So one of the you know, the cool, as far as the dramas of Silicon Valley go, with the tech industry, it's, you know, one of the fun ones to watch is whenever your startup gets bought, you know, and that's a big deal. We talk about it all the time. You know, we've had a couple big ones in recent months. I think Instagram and Skype are the two that immediately jumped to mind. And I read an interesting article this week that I thought kind of laid out the situation pretty well, because usually what you do is you focus on, like, you get the big announcement and maybe people's first initial reactions or thoughts of why or what's going to happen, and then you get, like, maybe another week into the cycle of further thoughts, and then, like, people stop talking about it. It's just, mm-hmm. like, you stop paying attention. And this article basically goes through, like, a bunch of different companies and different things that occur, and asks the question, so What actually happens when, you know, a company gets bought by a bigger one? And so he was pretty funny. He like laid out what the announcements look like when a startup announces. Mm-hmm. He was like, step one, announcement of thrilling acquisition. Step two, retention of startups, wildly ambitious founding
reiteration.
Oh, sorry, reader, thank you. Number three, explanation that either Google or Facebook is the best place to change the world. Number four, acknowledgement, or sometimes non-acknowledgement, that the startup product is being discontinued or is going into limbo. Number five, expression of heartfelt gratitude to the various supporters, usually including the consumers who are losing something they liked. and basically, it's this kind of, and he goes, like, he has an example of a bunch of different startups over a period of time, that were bought by either Facebook or Google that had really similar statements on their blogs. And basically what his argument is that, you know, we get all excited when a startup gets bought, but really and truly, unless you're either the big company buying the startup or you're one of the people working for the startup, it's just bad news for you. Because if you were paying attention and you liked their product is going away. and he made an interesting point that I thought, and he's like, so why does it keep happening? Why do we keep seeing this? And
because they're getting paid millions of dollars.
Right, yeah, exactly. Well, the question he's asking is, if it's this good product that everybody liked that got them off the ground, that got them noticed, why does the product have to go away? And he makes the argument, basically, Google and Facebook are already pursuing, you know, humongous dreams of their own and don't need new ones. So all those hopes and dreams of the small startups, they're like, whatever, we got bigger stuff. And the reason why Google and Facebook are purchasing them are twofold. Number one, these startups have really smart, ambitious people, and they want to bring them into the fold. They want to keep growing, and they don't want those people going work for somebody else. And then the other side is that large, well-established companies they're envious of these small, young companies, and they're basically saying, you know, there's a threat there that they view for these small companies, and you know, it's. You know, they say, yeah, he's basically saying, you know, there's this fear if you become too bloated that somebody else can come in and attack your business model from some other angle. And so by buying out all the talent and the product, you don't have to worry about that product threatening you. So there's no reason to keep it around because it's no longer a threat. And then basically they, in the author, like, points out the fact that for a lot of these guys that make these cool products that have no plan for an economic, you know, a stream of income, see Instagram, basically the whole, like, goal there is to get bought by Facebook or Google, you know, and it's just,
well,
like,
and then you have cautionary tales like Dig, where
right.
they didn't sell out and they said no and wanted to become a huge company, and then the fad passed and that was it.
Right, so there's this real move that even if they're not going to keep on, you know, even if they're going to move on to some other technology, they'll basically, they're like, that is the business model in a lot of, to a large degree, for a lot of these companies. There's no plan for a viable stream of income.
Dude, so we should just get bought at any time now, since we have zero plans for an income stream.
We're doing great.
We're right on task.
Now, man, we have the same plan that everybody else has. Eventually, we'll sell advertising.
There it is, right there. That's not our plan, is it? Is that our plan?
I think that's our plan.
Oh,
you know?
All right. That's kind of a
dumb plan. Okay. You're right. It's kind of a dumb plan. It'll be supplemented by our awesome stuff. And
we have such a better... We're like Twitter. We're still figuring out the plan, I think.
Exactly. We could
do advertising. Yes, that would be the easy way out. But we think there's a better solution for our listeners. And
you know what?
For our customers.
I can't disagree with that. So bias Google and Facebook, and
help us achieve our dream that we've been working on.
Yeah. So
don't worry. Yeah. Even if we get bought, this podcast is going nowhere.
Yeah.
It's okay.
No way. No, it's going somewhere.
Well,
it's
no. Let me acknowledge this. The podcast, like furloughbros.com, will not go anywhere. We're gonna stop doing updates.
Right.
But the podcast will be there.
You'll be able to go back in time and see all these.
Yeah, that's still there. And we totally appreciate everyone who has supported us throughout this time.
Oh, good times.
Yes.
Thankfully, Clear Channel hasn't caught on to us for our listeners' sake. Not for our sake. But
that'd be sweet. No,
one day.
One day. We can dream.
Or maybe not. I don't know.
You know, we're just really focused on the user experience right now.
And yeah,
we
want
to get that right. And then once that's nailed, we'll move on to the business model. Okay,
we're trying to... You know, first off, I think what we really need to do is focus on our core technology.
Yeah.
Eventually, we'll get our mobile strategy down. And then finally, we'll introduce some APIs. And we'll be ready to rock and roll.
We will allow other media companies to use our sound bites and our predictions to say I told you so. That's a brilliant idea. I don't know how you do that, but that would be so awesome. Oh, just the ridiculousness of it. That's what makes it awesome.
Yeah. Well, and it's
true.
I was going to say, what makes it funny is that's literally what every other startup does. The strategy is it's almost contrived, but it works really well. People make tons of money. And when I say it works really well, I mean it works really well unless you rely and like that product, in which case, sorry, it's going away.
You know what we really need to do? We need to figure out how to crowdsource all of this so that it's all just it's a user-generated podcast.
Yeah, but then we have to compete with users, and that sounds awful.
No. They are the podcast. We just create the platform. Whereas we'll just be a platform as a service.
But it's my opinion that's right, and that's what I want everyone to hear.
Well, you'll be the curator. See how that works?
Okay.
This is brilliant. We're on to something right now, I feel like.
But I want people to hear what I have to say. not what I think somebody else thought was good.
Like I said, right, we're still working on the user experience.
Yeah. But yeah.
Oh, man, that's
interesting.
Awesome.
I don't know. Interesting little glimpse into. Yeah, well,
that's fun. I mean,
what's to come? Yeah.
What's the alternative, right? So we got bought. You know what I mean? I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, that's how you say it. I guess what's
interesting about it is that it's like, this isn't shocking to me or surprising. I kind of knew it in the back of my head. I just had never been, my attention had never been drawn to it before. The fact that when these companies get bought, 9 times out of 10, there are some standouts like YouTube that got to stay around doing what they do. But for the most part, you know, there's a cool app that you're excited about and they get bought. That app's going away. it's stagnating, which is effectively going away.
Yeah.
You know? And what's worse is that probably the whatever tools that they brought to you, whatever fun they had, that's going away also. It's not going to be replicated or incorporated into the bigger company, you know, which is like, it's a bummer, you know, if you like it.
All right.
Interesting. Interesante.
So there's been some hacking going on, and you love those stories.
Yeah, man.
So tell me about it.
Internet security. So basically, you've probably heard about it, but there's some exploit within iOS that allows you to, if you take advantage of it, allows you to make free in-app purchases. And by free, I mean steal. But basically, yeah, it's like you go to a website or something, you download something, and it allows you to, in all of your apps, doesn't matter what the app is, in-app purchases don't actually get pushed to your bank account. And so people were being able to download all sorts of new stuff. Apple has been furiously working on a way to close that exploit. Basically make that impossible. And on Saturday or Friday, right as they, you know, right as they're like closing in on this new thing, this group comes out with a new exploit for OS X, a very similar one, allows you to do in-app purchases of OS X applications for free. And basically everybody was like, You know, there people are trying to get on top of it before Apple closed the hole because it's free stuff, and who doesn't want free stuff? But one of the things that I read, and this is not being very widely reported, but it didn't come out of Apple. More importantly, but basically what they're saying is, I wouldn't be so excited about this. I don't necessarily. You know, if you want to use this exploit, don't, because basically what's going on is like they're routing traffic through their servers.
Sweet.
When you you do this, and that's how they're able to avoid, you know, that's how they're able to get around it. And yet you basically have to give all of your credentials for iTunes, which includes all of your credit card information, your purchasing
Sweet.
Information. Yeah. So it's like, it turns out that it's one of your, you know, it's a great honeypot, because what it is it's, you're basically offering your targets, your victims, something free from Apple and as a hacker. And then in exchange, you secretly get all of their purchasing power. So it's like, yeah, you might save a few, you know, 10, 20 bucks on in-app purchases, but they're going to steal you for everything, you know, steal from you everything you're worth, which, you know, I don't know. That does have the feel of you get what you deserve. But, you know, at the same time, just be cautious. You know, there are very few exploits in this world that don't come with some sort of, you know, it's a deal with the devil sort of thing. You know, there are very few times where you get something for free and it's not actually going to cost you anything.
Downloading movies.
I said very few. I guess everybody does that. Well, you know, but even with that, you know, even within the context of that, that's still not the safest of practices, you know, and you know.
I wouldn't know personally.
Well.
Okay, maybe I do know.
I can say, I know, and you can't prove it, but unless you listen to this podcast and use it as evidence, in which case I'm lying, but, yeah, but, you know, you gotta be careful there, too, but, you know, I can't even imagine downloading, like, applications and stuff from, you know, your random websites, because it's like... Because it's so easy for somebody who knows what they're doing to attach a little virus to your free copy of Adobe Photoshop, and all of a sudden you've got some sort of a worm that's, you know, taking over your computer because you decided that you needed Photoshop. GIMP, it's free, it's awesome, and it does everything that Photoshop does. Not quite as well, but, you know, unless you're like a professional and have a reason to pay for it, just go with GIMP.
I use Pixelmator.
Yeah, that's like a super cheap version of it.
Yeah,
for
it's like,
Mac OS X.
I wait until it comes on sale, and then I picked it up. So for like $20. Yeah.
Actually, you know what I really like, and I talk about it every once in a while, but it's Pixlr.com, P-I-X-L-R.com, and it's an online, it's actually a browser-based photo editor. I think it's great. It's got layers, and it's got all your cool tools, and it works anywhere, and it's super, super awesome. That's my fave. It can't handle as many layers as GIMP handles because it's a browser-based thing, so it chews through system resources if you're not careful. but it's a great little app.
Speaking of great little apps, there is one called Prezi, P-R-E-Z-I. You ever heard of it?
No.
So it is a browser-based presentation tool. And what's cool about it is that they are, it's described as non-linear zooming presentations that are built around typically like cognitive science and spatial relativity constructs. All that to say, what it really is like a big canvas that you put different parts of your presentation on different sections of the canvas, and then it's as if there were a camera moving around the canvas zooming on onto specific parts. And there might be one where, because it's, you know, the internet and you could do that, you might have a section of the canvas where you go, that totally sounded like a dinosaur right there. It's probably just your fan, huh?
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Where I don't want to say this, like, You're zooming in on a part, like a section, and then you could say, and now let's look even deeper into it, and it can then zoom in like another layer down into
it. Oh, cool.
Yeah, and so it makes for pretty interesting presentations on this website. It has an just a picture, apparently. It's not actually a presentation. But anyways, so now they have one that they're like 3D presentations. So they've teamed them up with cool backgrounds. Like one of them, it's like a pier. And so as you click on something, it'll like move forward. It'll like Google Maps Street View style, move forward on
your pier.
And so you look like you're traveling down this or like through a mountainscape or something like that. And so it gives you this like 3D feel to your presentation. But they're pretty cool.
Taking your audience on a journey.
Yeah, exactly. and they also, another one that they added, which I actually think is even more important, is it's a PowerPoint import tool.
Oh, yeah, that's huge.
You guys didn't have that from the beginning? I saw it. I'm thinking about using it for a project I'm going to be working on maybe shortly in the future here. Because someone else saw it and they were like, hey, this is cool. You should check it out. I did, and it looks cool. They got offices, if you like this, in San Francisco and Budapest.
Ooh.
And they just raised $5.5 million and they're cash flow positive. So $15.5 million, even better. And they're cash flow positive. So they figured out their business model early on.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a cool service.
Yeah, definitely. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
Cool. So I saw some. This is just cool future technology. It's coming, so get excited. It's a piece of technology brings sight to the blind. It's a laser powered bionic eye. It's a little chip that they implanted right on the retina, and so it's designed for people who are blind and it's degenerative cases, macular degeneration and diabetic retinopathy. Jeez, I can't even. Basically, when you're diabetic, oftentimes blindness comes along with that. And this is designed to help with that. So if you were born blind, this probably won't help. I imagine that has to do with just how the nerves aren't actually. They don't grow in for whatever reason, or there might be other, there might be other parts that make it impossible for this to actually work. But basically, what it is it's a little chip that actually embeds itself into the neuron,
like spider style embeds itself, or it has to be placed there.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, like you're seeing like in sci-fi movies, they're like it's a bio robot that'll like crawl into your mouth and like.
No. No, this actually, it's a little chip that needs to be plugged, like, implanted.
All right.
Onto the back of your retina by hand.
Not as cool. And, it's cool.
Yeah, and it's got a little 24 by 24 grid, basically, when of points. So when you implant it, each one of those electrodes can do can fire off different neurons, and it gives you this really pretty pixelated vision, black, grayscale vision of the world. But they say for the first time, you know, you can see movement again.
Wow.
You can make out faces and stuff. They said even, and as long as like the text is big enough, they can even make out text, which is pretty incredible. But one of the things that I really like about this little device that I think is the coolest part is it doesn't have a power source. So how they on board, and obviously it requires some sort of power, but basically it has like a little solar panel on the front side of it. It's not exactly like a solar panel, but it's a similar type of technology. And the reason why they have that is because it has a laser on. You wear these like glasses, and the laser shoots an infrared beam through your retina.
What?
Into the and it hits it, and that little infrared laser beam charges the that little cell and charges the device and gives it power. So it gives you like a 512 pixel view and uses lasers to power it. It's awesome. It's so cool. It's like this is the greatest thing ever. And I'm assuming they're using the laser because it produces a really, really dense amount of photons as opposed to ambient light. But I got to believe that the goal is to get to ambient light eventually, power charging these things, which will be pretty awesome. You seem distracted.
I'm watching the video of it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's kind of like...
It is pretty amazing.
I started to go nuts when they showed the incision into the eyeball. It's all CG. But you're just like, what? That's an eyeball.
Yeah.
And then it's like Spider-Man, what is it? Spider-Man 3 or 2?
Which one?
Which one has Octavius in it?
Spider-Man 2.
That's like that one where it like taps into the
yeah,
the eye nerves.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Pretty sophisticated little device they got going on. So hopefully we'll be bringing vision to the blind.
I hope I never need it.
Yeah, well, me too. But
that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Pretty cool. Let's talk about the future here a little bit here. You took a field trip to the future, didn't you?
I did take a field trip.
Back to the future, but...
No. I took a field trip to the set of Star Trek II, the untitled Star Trek.
Well, I'm glad they're coming out with another Star Trek movie. That right there is good news to me.
Exactly. So they're already in post production. This is a cool set that they got to go to. It is actually part of the National Ignition Facility at Lawrence Livermore National Labs. One of the perks of where I work. Is that we build high precision control systems, whether that's heat or movement or gas flow. And turns out the NIF project, as it's called, the National Ignition Facility, they need gas control, because what they're trying to do is they're trying to create these little tiny targets that are hydrogen gas, and then they take these lasers and they shoot lasers at it, and they try to ignite a fusion reaction. Basically, simulating what a nuclear fusion bomb would do. So,
oh, really?
Your hydrogen bombs, yeah.
Is that is that what they're doing in the movie? Trying to simulate, or what's the use in the movie?
So the reason why they went there is because this place looks so super futuristic. It looks like it's straight out of a science fiction movie. I'm looking forward to. I mean, there are parts of it that honestly, it looks like it could be the center of the Starship Enterprise, just, you know, easily.
Wow.
Like, you know, yeah. I mean, this place is a big deal. And it's fancy looking. Because basically, how NIF works is they have like this like 2 football field long room that's like 4 stories tall, and they have something like 196 lasers that they energize up to like gigawatts worth of energy, and then in billionths of a second, they take these, you know, gigawatts worth of lasers, and they all focus them in on this in this big old 30-foot diameter sphere. At the center of this tiny sphere is this thing called a holoron, I believe is what it was called, and it holds the tiny little pellet of hydrogen, frozen hydrogen in it, and then the lasers hit it, and there's this burst of X-ray radiation, and that X-ray radiation compresses and heats up the hydrogen to close to the surface temperatures of the sun, and hypothetically will trigger a fusion reaction, a sustainable fusion reaction. It's ridiculously cool.
So what were you doing there?
So basically, I got a tour because we helped them build systems.
So it has nothing to do with the movie. That's just pure coincidence.
Yeah, no, I like to explain it that way because for whatever reason, it people get excited cooler. About that.
Yeah,
if
I did.
If I were to tell you I went to the new National Ignition Facility, people are like, oh, okay,
that's
what is that? Yeah, and then I'm like, it's where they're trying to develop a sustained fusion reaction. They're like, that doesn't mean anything to me. But if I tell somebody it's where they film Star Trek 2, they're like, whoa, it's awesome. I'm so jealous. Like, I hate you people.
Yes, that's awesome.
Yeah, and but it was one of the cool things is they, right now they're just doing it for like test things. They just want to do it so they can see what happens. Kind of a mentality, which is crazy. And it's a big lab. It is like number two in the world for most expensive labs, right behind the Large Hadron Collider. You know.
Oh.
Question of why are we doing this? I don't know. Cause.
The Hadron Collider, we can make a black hole. Could we like blow up the world with this one?
I don't think so.
Fusion.
It's actually ridiculously stable. One of the big goals of the project is actually to hopefully one day build a power plant using this technology because number one, you use hydrogen, which is easy to it's quite abundant. So the fuel source is virtually free. They keep calling it free energy and it drives me crazy.
No.
Because it's not free energy. It's what it is it's a really cheap energy, and it's the lasers require a ton of energy to actually trigger the reaction, and it releases many times that amount of energy when it erupts, and everybody's like, so therefore you get more energy than you put out than you take out, so it's like free energy. I'm like, it's not how it works. You waste the hydrogen. The hydrogen becomes helium, and you can't do anything with it after that, except fill up balloons and irradiate things.
Look, all I know is energy is never created or destroyed, simply transferred.
Yeah, that's, you know, the more people admit that to themselves. But fusion reactors are really, really stable, and one of the reasons for it is they require so much energy to activate the reaction that as soon as you take away that activation energy, there's like nothing left. So if you were like to bomb, you know, it's unlike Fukushima where you have to actually keep it cold because the reaction is self-sustaining. These guys are like the self-sustaining part of it is gone pretty much as soon as you use it.
Wow.
And so it's actually a humongous engineering hurdle because it's like, in order to create a power plant of this scale, they need to be able to trigger this reaction like 18 times a second. And so the models that they have show like this. They have this big reaction chamber that's like stories tall, and they would have like this gun that would shoot pellets of hydrogen out at faster than a AK-47, and then they'd have this massive battery of rams that gets up to gigawatt temperatures, and they'd be able to track these hydrogen pellets as they fall through the sky or fall through the chamber, and then laser them and trigger fusion reactions. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's completely impractical. If we figure out how to do it, I'm telling you, that's not the way we're going to do it. It's crazy. But
why does it have to fall through the air? I don't get that part.
Well, because
Why not just have it like on a conveyor belt?
Because you're sending off small little nukes, and it destroys anything. It's like the actual the Holoron that I was talking about, where the little pellet is.
Yeah.
They have like this arm that stretches out, and they showed us spent versions of them, and they just completely dissolve. I mean, they vaporize. Wow. The tips of these arms, and they, you know, but these things are designed to be like perfectly still and perfectly precise in the air, so they're like, they don't have to adjust the lasers or anything, which to me is like, wait, so you're gonna go from these things that are ultra stable, ultra precise locations to something that's moving through the air so fast that you can fire them 16 times a second and not disrupt each other, which means they actually have to pass through the firing chamber one at a time, 16 times. Yeah, sure, okay. Yeah, fat chance, guys. That's going to be fun. But hypothetically, this thing could be huge. It could do, could do awesome stuff. And
so because of the energy it produces, they wouldn't need a lot or many of them.
Well,
or.
Yeah, that's one of the big deals is you wouldn't have to build a very big one, or you wouldn't have to build very many of them to produce clean, sustainable energy for the entire United States / world. Hmm. So it's kind of a big deal if you can crack that nut. but just from an engineering perspective, it's like this is way off in the future.
Wow.
And I don't mean to ruin science fiction for anybody out there, but fusion reactors are stable by nature. Just remember that. I hate it when people like try to act like it's a hydrogen bomb, and hydrogen bombs are pretty much not dangerous. They actually require like
bombs are pretty much not dangerous. Okay, we got that one recorded.
Well, they're relatively stable. Touche. They're relatively stable. You know how they trigger a hydrogen bomb?
They drop it out of an airplane?
They drop it out of an airplane. And as it's dropping out of the airplane, they're constructed with a number of uranium or plutonium bombs positioned around the hydrogen core, the hydrogen pellet that they have in the center. It's a very big one.
Okay, now you keep saying pellet, and I keep literally thinking like pellets from a pellet stove. Is that the right mental model?
So, kind of just a lot smaller. Huh. For what we were dealing with, they're tiny. They're like the ball end of one of your like safety sewing needles.
Yeah.
They're like that big. They're very small. On a hydrogen bomb, they're a lot bigger.
Okay.
You put a lot more into it. But basically, you create a small sun-type environment by setting off a bunch of nukes with a large amount of hydrogen, and that triggers an even bigger eruption, a bigger sun-like event, which is your hydrogen bomb. But they're like, if a hydrogen bomb falls out of a plane and doesn't detonate, you have nuclear waste, but you don't have a hydrogen bomb. They're not going to eventually explode on you. Like, they're, you know... Comparatively, they're not very dangerous.
Do they light these things with like a match, or how do they get started?
What do you mean?
It's just, well, like, you know, okay, you drop a hydrogen bomb out of the airplane. Is it like there's a fuse attached to it, or
no? Okay, so this is nuclear bombs 101.
All right.
Yeah. So basically, there's two types of weapons. One is a uranium bomb, and like we'll take uranium for example. And what you want to do is you want to hit the special term critical mass.
Mm-hmm.
Once plutonium gets so hot and so dense, it starts a chain reaction, which causes your sun-like explosion. There's some cool physics behind that why that happens, but just keep in mind that what you're really looking for is getting to that critical mass. And mass being a function of temperature and density. And so there's two ways to do that. One is to take a bunch of really high-powered bombs and put it all, you know, take a chunk of uranium, weaponized uranium, put them all around it, and set off all the bombs simultaneously. And it compresses it down and gets it really hot, which causes your critical mass. Or you can take what they call the gun type, which is you have a big old chunk of it, then you have like a gun that has a little pellet of uranium, and you punch the uranium block with the pellet. You shoot it just like a gun, and that creates the right density and temperature. So that's how you trigger a uranium or plutonium bomb. And then a hydrogen bomb is like the same thing. It just takes so much heat and energy to get up to critical mass for hydrogen that you have to literally set off nukes. You have to set off plutonium and plutonium and uranium bombs in order to trigger the hydrogen fusion reaction, which produces helium and small suns on the surface of the Earth. So that's
suns.
Yeah, that's and what they're trying to do, what they really want to get to. So we figured, obviously, we have hydrogen bombs, so we can create sustained hydrogen reactions. We know it's possible. Now the question is being able to do it on a small scale where we can actually study it, and it's non-dangerous at all. It's relatively non-volatile. It can be contained within our test chambers. And by test chambers, I mean it's like a 4 foot, you know, 4 story tall, you know, chunk of the thing with 4 foot thick walls. I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's, you know, giant doors that swing on enormous hinges that are 4 feet thick. It's crazy. It's awesome. It's really, really cool. And they said when they, the one cool part they said was when they get up to high enough energy levels, they literally like cause normal materials within it to just go to go radioactive because they get bombarded with so much energy, which is, you know, always fun. Yeah, so they're not the safest thing in the world, but relatively speaking, they're safe. Kendra's parents live like a mile away from this facility, so that gives you any context of how confident they are that it's not that big of a deal, what they're doing. But they're talking about enormous energy levels. It's really cool. It's fun, and it's fun to get to see, you know, the future of technology we're going to be dealing with, you know, 20 years out, 20, 50 years out.
Yeah, totally. Do you think that's how long it's going to take?
Definitely. It's one of those things where once you figure out how to actually trigger the fusion reaction reliably, which we haven't done yet on that scale, then there's just an unbelievable amount of engineering that has to take place for the laser system and for the, you know, just the delivery system, and how do you actually capture that much energy? And because all power plants work the same way. Basically, you create a heat source, whether that's with a rod of plutonium or burning coal. You get water really hot, water turns into steam, you send the steam through a turbine turns a magnet, that generates electricity. Now imagine doing that but with a power source that's, you know, big enough to power the western side of the United States. You know, it's like that is a humongous feat in and of itself. And, you know, and that's apart from creating super high powered lasers and that are usable, and you know, not to mention the whole delivery system. How do you actually get it to fire fast enough? So there's some engineering hurdles that theoretically it's all possible, but they're enormous hurdles. And, you know, you say it could be 20 years, could be 50 years, but who can predict 50 years out? It might be 200 years. Wow. It's kind of but theoretically there's no reason why we can't do it, which is exciting.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Yeah. So, definitely. So much more time do we have, James?
I'm going to say you maybe get one more story, partly because of the intermittent internet connection issue. Partly because of time. So if you don't mind. We do have a request for talking about the Apple and Samsung case. But I don't think we actually have an article.
Well, one of the things I'll talk about it briefly.
All right, and then I'll finish up with a fun story. Go ahead.
Oh, dang it! I'm gonna take my story. I don't want to waste it on this. Basically, we don't talk about it because they're just kind of perpetually in. There's never any decisions made. They're you know, any decision that's made, it's a court, needs to be enforced by somebody else. Apple has been winning a few, but they're still being challenged, and in some places where they're winning, their bans aren't being enforced, and usually they're for phones that are like already 8-6 months old, so it's like the next generation's already out. It's just one of those things where it's like, you know, it's interesting. I personally think that, you know, that we've talked about kind of the nature of the lawsuits before. The idea of should you be able to patent this stuff? If you can patent it, you know, how far does that patent go? Which is like, it's a big discussion, but individual lawsuits and in cases, man, those just tire me out because they're just legal. They're legal battles back and forth. And it's, you know, it's like the Google Oracle case. You know, we took the position of, look, we're paying attention to it, we're following it, and once they get to the point where they're making a decision, then we'll bring it to you. Where it seems like they're getting to the end of these court cases. And the thing is that there's no clear victor here yet. It's still hypothetical. What do we think should happen? And, you know, my personal opinion on this is, there are certain of Apple's patents that people claim are too broad and overreaching that I think Apple legitimately has claim to. Certain UI stuff that they've done, like the slide to unlock, they had a pretty solid patent on that one. And, you know, the pitch and zoom, that nobody had done that in the way that the flick, you know, there were certain things that they had done and Google just straight up stole them, you know, just didn't even, you know, unabashful in what they did, you know, and at the time when all of this was starting, you know, RIM and Microsoft were very, very cautious around it. And Google basically, one of the big advantages that Google had was that they didn't pay attention to it. And now they're making the argument that maybe they have the patent, but I think they fall into the case of fair use now because they're just industry standards. You look at Google and you're like, you guys made them industry standards by ignoring the patent, and now everybody's used to them. You know, it's frustrating. It's frustrating because now it's to the point where it's like, yeah, to a large degree, Google's right. What are you going to do? Take away the pinch to zoom? You know, you're going to mess up a bunch of people's phones. It's going to cause a bunch of frustration. Google's going to learn, or Apple's going to lose a lot of face because they'll be the ones to blame for ruining your phones. You know, but at the same time, it's like, but the reason why we're at that position is because Google stole the iPhone's IP, what they had clearly legally won. Now you may, and there's a lot of debate about whether or not that should be fair or not, whether that's patentable. I don't know. I'm not a patent lawyer. I think though that,
What did you think of the Samsung specific case where the judge came out and was like, basically the Samsung tablet is not as cool as an iPhone, so therefore it's not a copy.
It's funny. It's one of those weird like twists and turns of, you know, the patent technology that they're working with is pretty weird. You know, they're basically Apple, or the patent
is that
law
patent
that they're working with is weird.
It's all weird.
It's the same idea as Crocs. You know, it's like Crocs, and we talked about this before. Crocs are super simple to make. How do you patent a Croc? You change some tiny little thing, you know, and you say, no, it's a different shoe. And basically,
it's
what
an alley.
Basically, what the law says for them is it's like, if you can't determine the difference between the two easily, then you've infringed on their patents. And you're like, okay, that's pretty weird. And, you know, like, that's really open to interpretation. And this one was open to interpretation. You know, it's basically the argument that Apple made was, holistically, you can't tell the difference between the two devices. And the judge said, dude, I can tell the difference between the two devices, and I don't care about this stuff. Like, this is clearly not an iPad, and how can you be claiming that they holistically stole the IP for the iPad if, you know, if anybody and their brother can tell the difference. And
I do think it's interesting how, I don't know, it's like when you compare a Windows machine versus an Apple machine versus a Linux machine, there are clearly differences. And I mean, yeah, in some ways there are some big similarities, right? They all got the mouse and the icons and stuff like that. And but on the other hand, it's like you would never get confused about what computer you're using. I mean, it's just like
right. The
even though they're applications, they tend to work just a little bit differently anyways. I mean, it's like if I were to close my Safari window right now on my Mac, it wouldn't actually close the program. You know, one of those
right. Weird
things. And you know, whereas on Windows machine, it's done. Except for that's the exception, is that it wouldn't actually turn off the program.
Yeah. Spotify, I'm looking at you guys. Yeah. I want you to go away when I hit the close button.
Yeah. And it's just for whatever reason, you know, they've taken two different tracks and they're different machines. It's just with the phones, there seemed to have been convergence happening pretty fast on that one.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, nope, we're doing icons, it's grid, and I mean, yeah, Android's got some GUIs, and they allow for more customization. And I mean, because Apple has one phone, if it doesn't look like that, you're like, okay, obviously not an Apple phone. But
right, yeah.
You know, but what if they had different bodies, and you weren't 100% sure? Could you actually tell? I don't know, but it's a weird space. Convergence happened pretty fast, and I wonder if part of it is just because.
Right.
The screen's just small enough that it doesn't allow for enough creativity in trying different things.
Well, I think, you know, and maybe I'm being a little hard on Google on this, but they have an awful record when it comes to respecting intellectual property. And they like their whole iBooks thing. They, you know, they made digital copies of entire libraries of books,
yeah,
and then
true.
Made them all searchable online without going through any of the publishers to see, hey, you mind if we do this? You know,
they have very trouble. Much been into asking forgiveness instead of permission.
Yeah, and I think that this is one of those classic examples of they knew that they bet they could get away with just taking it because Apple was such a predominant leader. They just sat there and they went, yeah, we can do this, doesn't matter. And, you know, some people really strongly believe that that's okay. That's not that they are
justified in
that
opinion. You're
right.
You know, we have
seen them
do that because they did that with, you know, with Sun's Java. They did that with YouTube.
Yeah.
They did that with their Music Locker thing. Yeah, they do, don't they?
Yeah, you know, and like we always talk about how much we love Google, so I, you know, but in all fairness, when they see another good product, they do not have any qualms about just up and ripping off people's intellectual property. And, you know, they did that to Google, to Apple. And you know, to make matters worse, they had one of their CEO was on the board of board of directors for Apple, you know, and just, you know, even so they not only did they steal it, but they kind of knew where it was going. They knew the inside track.
Well,
you know,
he claims he didn't, those, and I think they would have done it no matter what.
Well, yeah, but I mean, but it just compounds the whole, you know, you guys didn't respect the fact that somebody else was doing this thing. You got Google never tried to do it another way. And that's what I think. If you know, if you're a fan of Apple, that's where you're like, yeah, no, that's good. And you know, and it's not really popular to stand up for.
Whereas like with
IP
Palm,
owners.
You at least got the sense that they were trying something fundamentally different.
Exactly, and a lot of fans thought it was fundamentally better. You know, that was, you know, even Microsoft, you know, Microsoft's not getting torn into
yeah,
this battle.
True.
They come up with a new UI. It's not impossible. And a lot of people love it. You know, there's no reason to say that Apple's UI is the best. So why did Google's end up looking almost identical? You know, and, you know, especially for a couple of those operating systems, you know, as they kind of move on, they're starting to diverge a little bit more. But, you know, but it's just like, and Samsung, of all the hardware manufacturers, they are unrepentant, or at least for a period, they were unrepentant about just taking the body design. You know, those early Galaxies look just like the 3G and 3GS. It's ridiculous how close they look. And you know, Samsung just shrugged their shoulders and said, sue us, because by the time you win, we'll be on to the next model, and you'll have to start all over again. You know, so it's like one of those things where it's like, you know, you may disagree or agree with what everybody's doing, but, you know, the one thing's for sure is that the legal system's not getting a chance to actually make a decision on this. By the time they make a decision, it's too late. They've already moved on. They have to start the argument all over again, you know. But, you know, whatever. I don't know.
So I totally intended to just mention that and then make that homework for next week, but there you go.
Oops.
That's okay. Good talk. Interesting thoughts. I'm sure we'll get some comments about it. And like you said, it's definitely not over.
Yeah, that's the thing. There will come a day where we'll probably do a big chunk of the show on it. And
nah.
I think there will be.
I don't have the patience for it, but if you ever get a guest someday, you can do it.
Fair enough.
All right, so here's the last one, just kind of a fun one. Do you know what space smells like? Did you even know it had a smell?
I did not know it had a smell, and I do not know what it smells like.
And surprise, surprise, it doesn't smell like it's of this world.
Weird.
Yeah.
What does it smell like?
So all the astronauts that they ask, apparently you go out on your spacewalk, and then when you get off and you take off your helmet, there is a distinctive smell. And so far, every single astronaut has had very similar descriptions of it. And so they go, well, you know.
So, like, the smell of the spacesuit once they take off their helmet?
Yes. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Okay.
It has a smell on it, which smells like seared steak or hot metal or welding fumes. One person described it as sulfurous. Sulfurous. Yeah, it is pretty interesting. Let's see here. Yeah, it says, each time when I repress the airlock, open the hatch, and welcome two tired workers inside, a peculiar odor tickled my olfactory senses. At first, I couldn't quite place it. It must have come from the air ducts that repress the compartment. Then I noticed that the smell was on their suit, helmet, gloves, and tools. It was more pronounced on fabrics than on metal or plastic surfaces. It's hard to describe the smell. It's definitely not the olfactory equivalent to describing the palate sensations of some new food as tastes like chicken. The best description I can come up with is metallic, a rather pleasant, sweet, metallic sensation. It reminded me of my college Weird. Summers when I labored for many hours with an arc welder torch repairing heavy equipment for a small logging outfit. It reminded me of pleasant, sweet-smelling welding fumes. That is the smell of space.
Huh.
And NASA has commissioned this guy to work on this project in his spare time to try to create the smell of space so that they can train astronauts to smell it, you know, in their training on Earth, so that when they're up in space, they're not like, whoa, what's that? And I'm kind of like, really, NASA, that's how we're spending our money? Awesome. But that's what they're going to be doing.
Yes.
But kind of cool. That's cool. Kind of interesting to know. Space has a smell, and it smells like seared steak or welding fumes.
Weird. Basically, it smells like material that's been bombarded by the sun.
All right, yeah.
That makes sense.
I had one of the commenters who goes, if space smells like gunpowder, then I assume that would support the Big Bang Theory. Ba-dum-tch. Oh, I love it. So, yeah, there you go.
Jeez.
That's your space news for the day. Pretty cool. So anything else going on in your life?
Oh, man. Man, oh, man. No.
All right.
I watched The Dark Knight Rises entirely too many times this weekend.
So, okay, all right. So, I don't want to know about the movie. I just want to know, is it good?
Yes.
Okay. That's all I want to know. I want to know more, but I'm going to withhold asking any questions. Yeah.
It's probably good.
No, it's all right. It's okay. You're done. It's okay. It's good.
I was going to talk about the show. You don't have to cut me off when I talk about the show.
Okay, talk about the show.
I was just going to say, plenty of our listeners has probably not seen it either, so it would be cruel to talk about it anyways on the show.
All right, fair enough. So I've been building a fence and not watching The Dark Knight Rises, which is sad. Actually, the fence has come along well, so that's good.
It's good.
Yeah. That's all I got. So, everybody, thank you for joining us. I'm glad we were able to figure out the internet connection or whatever with that, so that we could keep going. Hopefully next week we'll be able to be live the entire time. I don't know. Who knows, right? It's the crazy days of summer. So, with that, I am James Furlow, my brother and fellow Dark Knight is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. That last time when I got disconnected, Brian started hitting me up on Gmail, and I forgot we were talking through Gmail because I popped it out. Mm. So I just closed the Gmail tab without thinking about it, and all of a sudden he went away. I was like, oh! Wait a second!